for 1 year.
House Ed and Commerce will now come to order. It's June 6, 2016, and it is 5 minutes after 10. With us, we have Representative Ledoux, Representative Tilton, Representative Culver, Representative Josephson, Representative Keto, myself, Chair Olson. We do have a forum to conduct business. Today, the only item on the calendar is House Bill 4002, and basically, we're just getting some clarification from agency people on a few of the loose ends that we have hanging out. I think I will start out with Lori Wang, who is calling in from Anchorage. Lori, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us today. And I'm drawing a blank. We have about three questions for you. And,
Oh,
we're going to hold you for questions only until the end.
I'll be online, sir.
Yeah, thanks. Greg Cashin, would you join us, please? And probably Marie Marks at the same time, and we'll double up. And please state your name and affiliations for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Greg Cashin, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. For the record, my name is Marie Marks. I'm the Director for the Division of Workers' Compensation.
Yeah, an easy one for you, Greg. Are there any breakouts on job place fatalities that would break state employees out from the aggregate of all the employees in each year? Do you break them out that way?
We are working on that. I've asked our staff to start looking at that data. The way our data collection system works is that we don't have an easy way to pull that, but we'll go through. And I know that there was 22 fatalities in 2015, and we're in the process of going through and seeing what specifics we can pull from that to see which ones were specifically police officers, firefighters, or State of Alaska employees.
And I think what we will do with that is probably pass it on to the next committee, which will be finance, and give them not only the bill, but give them backup information that should come down on their time. Ray, can you walk us through the death benefits that are currently in place? Or would that be more for Lori on workers' comp?
No, that's an absolutely appropriate question for you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act, when an employee suffers an injury that's work-related, the Act provides certain benefits to the surviving spouse and any eligible dependents. To summarize those benefits, reasonable and necessary funeral expenses not exceeding $10,000, so they can have up to $10,000 of funeral expenses. A lump sum payment of $5,000 is paid to the surviving spouse, or equally divided among surviving children if there is no widow or widower. In addition, there's an ongoing benefit that is paid to the surviving spouse and children if they had them. And the calculation of that depends on how many children survive and so forth. But it is paid to the surviving spouse until the spouse remarries or for 12 years, unless the spouse has reached retirement age, then it would keep being paid. And it's paid to the children until they're 19 or an additional 4 years if they are attending college.
Is that based on a percentage of their salary, or how is it calculated?
It is. We have a calculation that determines an employee's spendable weekly wage, and so the calculation is generally a percentage of that spendable weekly wage. For example, if there's a surviving spouse and no children, it's 80% of that weekly wage. If there's one child, it's 50% of that spendable weekly wage to the surviving spouse and 40% to the child. So to give you an example of how that would work, if that employee had an average weekly wage of, let's say, $1,076, it would be $673 a week to the widow or widower and $538 a week to the child.
So we come pretty close to making the family whole.
Yes,
as respects There's a lot more.
There is, and there is a maximum under workers' comp for all our payable benefits that are paid out weekly, and it is a max of $1,211 per week.
Now, other than that, there's an accidental death policy. Can workers' comp subrogate their payments from the accidental death policy?
The workers' compensation payments are paid regardless of whatever insurance policies are separately out there. The only thing that would be taken into consideration is Social Security payments. If for some reason there was a disability payment, you know, we would offset some of that. Sometimes a surviving spouse would get disability payments if the employee had illness prior to the time of passing. There would maybe be some past indemnity payments due payable to the surviving spouse. So the benefits I'm talking about is just the death benefit that is not offset or impacted by other insurance policies, life insurance policies, accidental death policies.
Is there an offset for the children, dependent children, for they get Social Security benefits from a deceased parent?
They may be reduced by Social Security offset. Under certain circumstances, I believe that it could be reduced by Social Security offset. But I'll look more into the details for that, and through the chair, Representative Colbert, and get back to you on that.
Any further questions?
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Marks, since I have you here, I just want to confirm that I believe is true. If the deceased is a single individual without dependents in their household, then their estate would receive $10,000 funerary expenses, and there would be no other compensation. Isn't that right? To the estate.
So the benefits are payable, and through the chair, Representative Joseph, the benefits are payable to dependents. And so if in certain circumstances other family members, you're correct, not the state, but other family members, if they were dependent on deceased, financially dependent, then could be entitled to those outside of those funeral expenses. But correct, if there are no dependents, the expenses would be the funeral expenses up to $10,000.
Because the accident causing death falls under workers' comp rubric, there's no wrongful death tort available. And so, just so I'm clear, if a single person dies, has zero dependents of any size, shape, or form, there could be an OSHA fine, because OSHA might find that the workplace was unreasonably dangerous. But essentially, that would be it. The person dies, the estate gets $10,000, the world moves forward. That's basically true, isn't it?
Through the chair, Representative Joseph Sunday.
Under my example, am I right that that's... With no dependents, a single individual working, who dies at the workplace?
The Workers' Compensation Act is the exclusive liability for workplace injuries, correct? And so if there's no dependents that would file a claim under the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act, then there would be no benefits payable to those dependents.
Right. And no tort could be brought because it's within the workers' comp rubric.
Under the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act, correct. It is an exclusive remedy provision. In exchange for giving up the right to bring a tort action, the dependents who are making claims do not have to provide or prove fault.
Right.
Or damages. Sorry, that's work-related, but not damages.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, just thought we might clear the record that this provision of workers' comp applies to not only peace officers, but any state employee or any employee statewide, whether it's private or state, that if there were stepchildren, any other non-blood relative, direct dependent of the deceased, would not receive any benefits as Representative Josephson has brought out. Correct?
The Workers' Compensation Act, through the chair, Representative Kohler, the Workers' Compensation Act provides, again, benefits to the dependents. And so I, to the extent that the dependents are not people who are seeking to recover outside of the act, I'm just not familiar with whether, you know, people who are outside the act can, what their causes of action may be. All I can say is that the act is the exclusive remedy for employees and those dependents of the deceased employee.
Well, that's what I can reflect. We've been joined by representing Reinbold pretty close to the beginning of the meeting. Maria, are you familiar with the Bunkhouse Act?
I am not.
It's very good. The caps construction, and basically it would provide workers' compensation coverage to workers in remote sites, either like pipeline construction or remote canneries, or even people like fishing game, people that are out. And it would cover them in the time that they weren't working. And is that still in place or something similar? Maybe it doesn't go by the Bunkhouse Act name, but are Alaska workers covered 24 hours when they're away from home at a remote site?
Mr. Chairman, correct. It's called the Remote Site Doctrine.
Oh, okay.
Or the Bunkhouse Act. Possibly.
Representative Culver?
So if you eat that polar bear when you're sleeping and you can't run slow, your dependents would be covered in the workers' comp.
We saw worse things happen during the construction of the pipeline. We saw a guy tightrope block a antenna and fall and die, and was covered for workers' comp. Representative Ledoux.
So does that cover legislators and their staff on the Ranjuna?
Did you represent them? Do I haven't faced that exact question. I hope I don't have to. That would be a fact-intensive inquiry.
I don't think it's remote.
But it's, it may not be remote, but just as I think if you're, you know, if your employer sends you on a business trip someplace, I think that you're covered under workers' compensation until you return home, even if you're not doing business for 24 hours during the day. I don't know what this has to do with the...
It is correct, because there are always things... I used to get a lot of insurance trade writers, and they always have the strangest claims of the month. And, I won't go into details, but Michigan has to speak. We'll never be able to beat Michigan for any strange workers' comp thing. But I think you're probably right. But I think Marie would rather get back to you. There's no rush because it's not pertinent to the bill in front of us. But don't say keto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Marsh, for being here. The discussion we're having today on this bill is about survivor benefits for police and firefighters, and I do think we are digressing a little bit, but my question is, does workers' compensation provide a health care benefit to surviving spouses or dependents?
Through the chair, Representative Keto, it does not specifically provide a health care benefit. It provides those continuing monetary benefits to be used for purposes as the surviving spouse sees best fit.
So that was a follow-up. So I guess the question I have, I guess more of a comment now, is it seems like the bill is trying to address a health care benefit to surviving spouses and dependents that is independent of what workers' compensation provides. I mean, there are cash payments that are going to spouses and dependents, but to expect that they would use that money to pay for insurance, considering how high the cost of insurance is and the fact that we do have an existing plan, it does seem like we have a bill in front of us that addresses that, and I don't know that workers' compensation is the place where we need to be really discussing it. We've got a bill, and we've got a bill that addresses it. I think that's very clear in front of us. Thank you.
But actually, the reason I asked about the Bunkhouse Act is we do have brown shirts and blue shirts that are out in the field for an extended period of time where they're not working 24 hours a day. Wanted to clarify if they would have workers' comp benefits if they died on their time off, but while they were still at a remote site, if that helps you. I think you guys are good. Anybody got any further questions? Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Scott Jordan. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Scott Jordan, Director, Division of Risk Management, Department of Administration, and I'm here to answer any questions you might have.
Well, my good feeling is you've been following this pretty closely all the way along, and is there anything that we're missing or we should be looking at that we haven't asked yet?
That's a loaded question. Mr. Chairman, I think you guys have covered everything that I can see that relates to workers' comp. All the questions that were just asked today, those are correct answers. To answer Representative Ledoux, you are covered. While you're down here, you're considered to be in travel status, so that's a 24/7 coverage. So you could be out eating dinner and bust a tooth on food, and it's covered. So, but I think this has been well covered. Good questions, good answers.
Anybody got any questions?
Mr. Jordan, is there, just based on this discussion of the Remote Site Act and the bunkhouse considerations, is there anything that you know of in 4002 that would suggest that if a trooper was killed when not specifically working, that is, an accident befell them in a village that was not of a criminal nature, that the act would apply, that is, the bill would apply, and the dependents would get covered?
Through the chair, if I understand your question correctly, if they're out in a remote site, they're covered 24/7. So if they do have an accident that it's a loss of life or an injury, they are covered under workers' comp for that injury or that loss of life.
Thank you. As a follow-up, I mean, I'm going to look at the bill again, but would the bill, if that's workers' comp, would this bill cover them for an accidental death, that is, cover the dependents, that it was not of a criminal nature? It's designed to be comprehensive, even during, quote, downtime that may be otherwise payable at an annual rate. Or I just don't want to get into, in the torts, they call this frolic and detour, where you're off getting a latte and you weren't working those 5 minutes and someone runs into you. And you get into litigation about whether that latte time is covered under some accidental death provision or workers' comp provision.
Through the chair, the way I understand the way this bill is written is if it's a work-related injury, there is coverage for that, or a work-related death, there is coverage for that. So if they are a remote site and they have loss of life, they would be considered working. They would have work comp death benefits, and I would assume that this bill would then come into play.
Scott? On the King Epinosa, a good portion of the brown shirts and the blue shirts take their vehicles home at night. If they're off duty and they've got the detachment and they're driving home in a trooper vehicle, for example, and they get in a fatal car accident, would that be covered?
Mr. Chairman, it would be. If they have a state-issued vehicle, they are covered until they get home, basically, or out of the vehicle.
And the reason I ask is because if we're driving no personal cars to the LIO and we're home, we're not covered for that.
If it's within a 50-mile radius, you are not.
Yeah. Representative Doherty.
I'm just confused about something. This is all really interesting, the discussion of workers' compensation, but I'm trying to figure out what this has to do with the bill that's before us, and maybe I'm just missing it.
Looking for all the benefits that we have that would be going to somebody who's involved in a fatal incident workers' compensation was a good portion of it because it pays 70 to 80% of the salaries. You know, get the big picture. Any further questions for Scott? Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you.
Let's see.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Just as a point of order, it would be helpful before we adjourn today if you would kind of give us an oral report of what your CS is intended to be if we don't have it, you know, just so that we're aware of what your intentions are so we're kind of mentally prepared to move the bill.
I'm hoping I can do better than that and ask if the CS out here this afternoon.
Okay.
That help?
Yeah, that would help. And, okay, well, we will figure out our logistics, so I will give you the line anyway.
Yep. That's my intent. I think that it'll either move up or down tomorrow morning in less than an hour, and my gut feeling is it moves out the door. But I haven't seen it yet either, so for me to see how they draft it would be premature. Representative Keogh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess my issue is if the chair doesn't know what's in the CS, and none of us know what's in the CS, who does, who requested the CS, and who is trying to fix issues that I don't see in the bill. And the bill seems pretty self-explanatory to me, and I haven't heard any comments that there are issues that need to be addressed, except that we're waiting for a CS, and I don't know what's in the CS. So I guess that's my frustration. We're sitting here going, I guess, slower than I've ever seen on any bill in the legislature, and covering so little ground each meeting that I'm really wondering what's going on. I think this is a simple bill. This got another committee. We have the ability just to move it on, and I haven't heard from anyone significant concerns of how it was written or what the issue is that needs to be addressed. So I think I'd reflect or add on to what Representative Culver says. That is, if there are changes that need to be done, you could let us know what changes you're requesting. So if you have not requested changes, but you've requested a CS, I'm confused. If you have requested changes, you know what those changes are. We should know what those are. Thank you.
This could be a bit anticlimactic.
Let go of here.
Basically, we started with a document that we got from one of the public service unions and put up some sideboards, but I'll let Conrad there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson. The CS that's been requested, some of the minor changes that are made to the bill will probably be technical changes that, as a general rule, we see coming out of legislative legal with bills that have been drafted by Department of Law. There are always some minor tweaks. It's just a drafting change, style changes that are required by the drafting manual. And our legislative legal does that with any bill on their first run through to clean those up. The first change that is should be contemplated by the CS is a time limit of 10 years for benefits for surviving spouses. This is based on what is seen in other states that provide a similar benefit. Some have a little bit longer term, some have a shorter term, some have a phase-in period, and then the surviving spouse is required to pay money to maintain the benefits. The other change, I should back up, there was no intended change to the coverage for children. That would remain the same, 19 or 23 if they're currently in school. In the event of remarriage by the surviving spouse, they would no longer qualify for the free medical coverage.
Thank you. To the chair, Mr. Jackson, it sounds like the CS is designed to meld concepts in workers' comp with this health care death benefit. Is that right? By using caps on age at 19 and 23 and ending the benefit upon remarriage?
Representative Josephson through the chair, there really wasn't any intention to mirror workers' comp as relates to the children. The current language of the bill is not changed. So that that was something that was contemplated, but the concern was to make sure that the children, surviving children, are covered through through college, basically, at 23.
Yes. I'd kind of like to see the bill go out in its present form. So how are you going to handle amendments? Because my intention would be to make an amendment to that effect. But you generally have a 24-hour rule. So if we don't get this thing before 24 hours, again, how are you going to handle the amendments?
Take that next week. What we're doing is there's 13 other states that have something similar to this, and what we did is we took the average on it. The way the bill is written now, somebody could have full medical up to age 65, and at that point in time, they'd still have the secondary. I think that's, in defense of the slowness of the committee, we waited a year for the first fiscal note, the one that was due out last April. It's our understanding it was about $60 million, which I'm sure is why we didn't get the fiscal note. The actuarial report that came with it, we got like 2 days later. We got a second one. That's the one that's in the packet right now. But basically, we got two fiscal notes and two actuarial studies this year within the last month. That's why we moved slow last year, because we didn't have it.
Wasn't that fiscal note $60 million when all state employees were included, as opposed to this very narrow bill that we've got now?
I haven't seen the fiscal note. But this one doesn't include any other state employees other than the ones that are listed in the current policy. The only changes that Conrad just laid out are made off the bills before us. It doesn't add any other classes. It doesn't change any of the definitions of employees. It's just straight across the board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate you informing us kind of what your intent was. That's very helpful. And, you know, I understand, you know, your background. You're trying to minimize impact to the Treasury and tighten this up. But I can't support a 10-year limitation. I don't know what that family situation would be in. I don't feel that this is as much of a moral obligation as it is a financial obligation. And I feel an obligation to the families that have put their loved ones on the line of duty. You know, Obamacare gives kids coverage to 26. So if your kids were at home and you're covered at work, insurance would cover them to 26. So 19 and 23 to me is a number that I don't think is today's world what we're looking at, if those kids are going to college and whatnot. So I would prefer to move the original version. If you want to fix the commas and the legalese, fine, but I would throw my two cents in that I would be supporting amendments to get us back to the original version, and maybe, you know, we can reconsider moving the whole CS and see where you've got support on what version and what you want to do with it, rather than going through all the work of bringing it out, amending it back, and moving it on. Just to kind of have that candid conversation, try to work with you on this, and, you know, no surprises for anybody. But
Let me explain why I did what I did.
Okay.
This bill has had one hearing in the Senate in 2 years, and that was last week in State Affairs. It's never been heard in Labor and Commerce. It's never been heard in Senate Finance. There's a reason for that. There's not a lot of support for this bill in the Senate. What I was trying to do was find something that was not only would get it past our finance, hopefully get it out of our finance department. I think you know how they felt. They spent a lot of time looking at it and did some significant things to it. My goal was to come up with a bill that would make it out of the House and make it over to the Senate. What happens over there, I can't guarantee, but I I've been doing this for 12 years. I'm right more than I'm wrong on something like this, and I see it dying inside. So, I mean, if you have something that is like this, I don't even think we'll get out of the House Finance. But if you want to take it up to 26, that was one of the numbers that we left out. Representative Johnson, followed by Kito, followed by Ledoux.
Yes, I want to associate myself with the comments of Representative Ledoux and Representative Colbert. I had a House Bill 3, which was written in probably December 2014. It was quickly written. It was designed to do essentially what Governor Parnell was doing administratively. There's been more, I think there have been tremendous coverage in the media about this. I don't think the legislators in either chamber can assert that this has caught them unawares in some way. And, you know, if we send this to the Senate and they don't pass it, I wish them good luck. I just think that it's time to move the bill. And that's just how I see this.
How long did it take you to write the letter?
10%. When we were on the floor.
1 o'clock.
Pardon me?
Take it now.
continued.
We're back on the record, and a waiver of the bill is being circulated. So you won't hear any talking for a few minutes?
No, we can just gavel out, Mr. Chairman.
We're back on the record, and the Labor and Commerce Committee will adjourn at 10:55.